Well, we are halfway there. And by we, I mean the Boston Celtics, who just 5 hours from now or so begin their quest to make it back to the NBA Finals. The quest for Banner 18 is just 50% of the way there. 8 wins down, 8 wins to go. They take on the Indiana Pacers, game 1, 8 p.m. on ESPN on this scorching day in Schenectady, New York. You are listening to the Drew Buzney Show on WRUC 89.7. We talk the Celtics. We also talk golf. We have a great early edition show coming up for you. Stick around. You cannot escape the heat today. The AC will not help you. It is a pure scorcher. And that's what we hope from the Celtics tonight. We hope that they can get back to their red-hot shooting. You know, seemingly a little cold the last couple games against the shorthanded Cavaliers. But with the Indiana Pacers team, who some can argue it's a fluke that they're even in the Eastern Conference Finals, defense is definitely not their strong suit, even though they are much improved from that 55-point win early on in the season. Yet again, it's been the whole regular season. It's been, you know, halfway through the playoffs. So they are improved. I would not say they are up to the caliber of the Celtics, who just recently announced that Derek White and Jrue Holiday both were elected to the NBA All-Defensive Second Team. That is a great accomplishment. But it's not just the backcourt that, you know, is good defense. We have Brown and Tatum, who are underratedly good defenders, who, you know, year after year have said that that's what they want to focus on. And, you know, I feel like the past couple years that hasn't really been the case, but there's definitely been a truth to those statements that they really want to be a two-way player because their defense is absurd. It's not just the blocks. It's, you know, just being handsy, the steals, you know, contested shots. And yes, stars are going to make contested shots, but the more they have, the more their game's going to be off. You don't want to leave them with all these wide open shots. And Brown and Tatum have been able to do that. But the Indiana Pacers worry me. You know, we've played them once, and I don't know if you would call it a playoff atmosphere, but the in-season tournament was as close you could get to the playoffs that early on in the year. And they're a young team. They've never been in this situation, so I doubt they really feel that much pressure because it's all new to them. They don't really know what to expect. So they go into every game, and they just really think it's an ordinary game. They don't, I don't think, understand the caliber of what's going on. They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think when you're a new team who hasn't made the playoffs in a long time, not even been this far in the playoffs in a long time, it's something you're not accustomed to. So I don't know if you want to call it beginner's luck, but I feel like there's a sense of a beginner's luck in here. And yes, their path here wasn't that hard. I mean, you can argue that for both teams. The Celtics, you know, they played a Miami Heat team who it's good even without Jimmy Butler, but they didn't have Jimmy Butler. And then they played a Cleveland Cavaliers team who had their star player, Donovan Mitchell, for three games, and then not for two games. So the Celtics haven't had the hardest path. They've played good teams just without their star players, but you could argue the same exact thing for the Indiana Pacers. They played the Bucks without Giannis and Dame. They played the Knicks, who were decimated with every injury. Under the sun. They had people that play in their regular season that aren't really on a playoff roster playing in the playoffs. And a team can never win when they don't have their playoff caliber players playing. And yes, they got to 7, but it's just hard to do so. But the Pacers are a fast-paced team. They love to push up the court. You know, they get past half in like 5 seconds, which is pretty fast for the NBA. So the Celtics really need to rely on that top three defense. And yes, it's been shown. They've held, every time they've won, I believe, in the playoffs, they've held, or maybe the vast majority, they've held their opponent under 100 points. And it's going to be difficult against the Indiana Pacers. They could be the best offensive team we've played yet so far in the playoffs. So, you know, defense really needs to be the emphasis. And just because you made the All-NBA defensive team, and just because, you know, you say you're going to be a good defender, it doesn't mean you are. And I feel like the Celtics have shown us that they're going to be a good defensive team. But this is a big test. This team destroyed us in the last almost playoff game in December. And so this is our rebuttal now. It's in the real thing, in the real playoffs, what matters? Can the Celtics come out? And I have a feeling that the the Pacers could go off. They could go off and have this unbelievable game we've saw in game two of the last couple rounds where the teams just don't miss a three-pointer. And I feel like that could happen. I'm not saying that's going to happen four times. I have a feeling the Celtics are going to win 5 and 6. I mean, I think there's a chance they sweep, but I just feel like in every series, a team has a chance to steal one. But it's really a defensive battle. I mean, you're playing a team in the Pacers who's not really a good defensive team. They're average at best. And you're going against a team that, you know, is the top two defender, a really good defending team, you know, holding people below 100 points. And I know I'm saying you know a lot, but I want you to understand that defense, as much as people don't always like to admit, wins championships. This could be the chance where defense wins this because both teams have insane offensive capabilities. Maybe the Pacers outweigh us a little bit in like athleticism and three-point shooting, but at the end of the day, if the Celtics can just play their average offense, score 100 points, and we can hold our defense play spectacular, then it's not too much to worry. Just in the back of my head, I feel like if we come out and the Celtics don't play their defensive game, then all of a sudden get ran away. And it happened a lot in the Pacers-Knicks series that I feel the Knicks didn't really come out with the right defensive intensity. And when that happens, the Pacers are a good shooting team that all of a sudden you're down 20. So the key to this series is to come out and be a great defensive team. That's the thing that matters. The offense will come from the defense. So that's the key. And if we do this, 4 more wins, we're in the NBA Finals. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're really close. We're halfway there. But we really just got to look one day at a time. Always looking in the present. Future doesn't really matter. The past doesn't matter. So at the end of the day, it comes down to defense. Not too much to say. Next show, which I believe will be our last show for this season and for this year, we will debrief the game, I believe the first 3 games that have happened. So hopefully by then it's a clinching scenario. And maybe if I have time and the Celtics win it all, we will do a special Celtics episode. Maybe even from the parade if I get to go. But who knows? We'll worry about that when that happens. Let's go one game at a time. But let's transition into golf. And last week was the second major of the year, the PGA Championship. Xander Schauffele finally breaking through. Maybe he heard my criticism. Maybe he was paying attention to the Drew Busney show and heard that I said he was a choke artist and he couldn't finish on Sunday and could never actually get over the hump, even if he had 3 good days before that. And he did. He didn't play spectacularly. He played just well enough to beat the field and win by 1 stroke on the 72nd hole. I felt like he honestly shouldn't have won. I thought Victor Hovland and DeChambeau were playing so much better than him. Just Hovland especially missed a lot of putts in the last 6 holes or so. There were a lot of times where Hovland had a birdie putt, and he just missed it by a centimeter. And I think that's because he's had such a poor year and he's finally just getting into his own this year and really coming into form. But I honestly thought for most of that round, Hovland was going to win. I thought he was playing by far the best out of the trio of DeChambeau, Hovland, and Schauffele. But I'm proud for Schauffele to win. I think that it was time. You know, he's been close for the past couple years, and it's great for him to finally win. And just before we get to the thing I want to talk about, I just want to mention Bryson DeChambeau. Yes, he's a live golfer, and yes, he's this odd guy who, when he came into the golfing world, he was very like, he was like the mad scientist. He had 4 most for yardages, but honestly, he was the most liked player this week. I loved him. He made a huge putt on 18 in the 3rd round, made a huge putt in the 4th round in 18, and he just had these reactions that I feel like golf, a lot of times, can be very stagnant. There's no emotion to it. It's just, you know, the golf clap. And, like, that's it. And there's no roars. There's very few roars. And I just feel like Bryson brings this different emotion to golf that just can only make it more popular. I mean, I feel like people are starting to watch golf for Bryson now. And I hope that can be for other people. I feel like they're not just watching golf for the shots and for, you know, who wins, but they're watching for this emotion. And Bryson has really had this 360 flip from someone people didn't really like to someone people really turn on the golf channel to watch. And so I just find that fascinating. He's really come around. I'm starting to like him. I've kind of looked past the fact he's on Live just because he brings this whole new emotion, love, to actually watching golf. It's become just this really spectacle to watch. It's a more entertaining thing to watch on TV on the weekends. But the real reason I want to bring is just our third golf debate. And the first 2 we've had are about Live and PGA Tour and their battle and their rivalry. But I want to move away from that today. And something that I don't think is really always debated But I want to echo what was said on Live from the PGA Championship, a great show on the Golf Channel by NBC. And it was just the caliber of the course. And they were saying that 95% of the courses on the PGA Tour were played as soft courses, meaning there's not firm, the ball rolls on the ball doesn't really roll on the green. You hit it up high, it sticks. It spins back a little bit. 5% of the golf courses are firm and fast, kind of like what you see in the Genesis Scottish Open and the Open Championship, where, you know, there's 50 yards rollout. You play the roll. You're not always playing it to the flag. You're playing it short of the green, and it rolls up and so forth like that. And the major championships, the four major championships, maybe not the Masters, I don't know, just because it's not played at a different course every year, they should choose the hardest courses in the world, courses that challenge the golf's greats. And I felt like Valhalla didn't really challenge the best golfers in the world, merely just because it played like every other course on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's the same exact thing they've been playing for the past 20 weeks. There was no new challenge. Yes, there were some tough pin positions and it was a long course, but the way it played was the same they've played all year. By playing a different course, maybe one that's super tree-lined, there's no room for error, it's firm, fast, something in the United States you don't really see on the PGA Tour. It's, you know, you have to get out of your comfort zone. You've been playing these soft courses for 20 weeks, and all of a sudden now you have this firm and fast course, and you have to adjust your game. And that's what makes it challenging. And I feel like the U.S. Open does a really good job at choosing these hard courses, not only for their strategy, but for the way they play them. They like to play the courses firm. I don't know if you remember the 2015 Chambers Bay U.S. Open, but people were hating it because the greens were so firm and so fast that people could barely putt on it, and it was impossible. And that's what you want to see. At the end of the day, I don't really want to see the golfer shooting 20 under after 4 days. I'd rather it be 5 under, 6 under, kind of like what it was at the U.S. Open at the Country Club. And that was a hard course. That course was in beautiful condition. It wasn't soft. You know, it played difficult. And at the end of the day, these major championships, not the low-level ones where, you know, you can choose to go to, the ones that you qualify for and that mean the most and induct you into the Hall of Fame, like, they should be the hardest courses, the hardest tournaments to win. And not just from the pressure, just from the style of course. And I felt like Valhalla didn't really live up to the style of course that is what a major should entail. Not to mention the fact that they're probably never going to get a tournament after they arrested the number one golf in the world and lost millions of dollars in economic value. They're never going to get that major tournament there ever again. I mean, that's why the governor and mayor of Kentucky and Louisville were out at the golf course. They realized that they were kind of in the hole. They messed up. And, like, yes, the police has to do their job, but they had to just realize it was a mistake. I don't think he should have been arrested, but we're not here to get into politics. But that mistake cost them a lot of money and probably the tournament. And honestly, maybe that's a blessing in disguise because the tournament really wasn't that good. Yes, it came down to the 72nd hole, but it was 20 under. And it just, I don't know, like, I don't really want to see a birdie fest. You see a birdie fest every other week on the tour when the scores are 30 under, 25 under. You rarely ever get to see golfers struggle. And the four times a year, I want to see them struggle. I wish they could struggle every single week. But I guess they're too nice to the players and they want to have a birdie fest. But I'd rather, you know, the winning tournaments like they used to be one over, even one under. And I know it's hard to do based on how far the players hit it and they become better players. But if there was ever a way for the scores of these tournaments just to be lower. I mean, a major championship should never be 20 under. And yes, the Masters gets there, but the Masters course, that doesn't really matter. Sorry, it doesn't really matter for the Masters course because there's this whole prestige and tradition to the Masters that the score doesn't really matter. It's just playing on that course and conquering Augusta National. Shooting 20 under, I think Spieth won at 18 under, that didn't really matter. I don't care about that. But it's the Open, U.S. Open, the Open, and the PGA Championship that go to different courses every year, and there's not the prestige of playing on the same course and the beauty of it that the Masters have. But those tournaments should be low scoring. And I think Brooks Koepka won at a low score, maybe 9 under. It was below double digits. That's all I'm asking. It should be a test. Like, you should have to shoot a bogey day, like a over par day to win. You shouldn't be shooting in the mid to low 60s. There also shouldn't be 362s or 262s in a major tournament. I mean, yes, there could be in the Honda Classic at PGA National because that's a low-level tournament. or at the Charles Schwab Challenge this week in Texas. Like, those are low-level tournaments where players have just a free choice to do, and they're not a big purse. But these are major championships. These are the biggest. These are the Super Bowls. These are the World Series. And just to make it seem like any other tournament we've watched is just, I feel like it's a failure on the part of PGA of America. And so I hope when we go to Pinehurst in the U.S. Open, it's not the case, and I hope it's a low-scoring event. But I wasn't really happy watching it. Yes, it was a good ending, but and I'd rather he hit a putt on the 18th hole to win at 3-under. But that's just my opinion. Let me know if you think I'm wrong. And we're wrapping up the end of the show. Speaking of golf, I want to offer my sincerest apologies to my family. They're all really good golfers. But we'll have our tournament when we'll get home, and we'll see who's really the best. So better get practicing. But that is our abbreviated show for today, Golf and Celtics. Next week, we'll be back for our Season 1 finale. Hopefully, we'll debrief the first three Celtics games, and that'll be it. And so I just want to thank you for joining my journey this year. We have one more show to go. Have a great rest of your day. Hopefully, you don't get sunburnt, and see you soon. And go Celtics!